Listening comprehension. Task 1. For items 1 to 15, listen to a passage from an audio guide and decide whether the statements 1 to 15 are true, A, or false, B, according to the text you hear. You will hear the text twice. Now you have 30 seconds to look through the statements. Now we begin.
Welcome to Central Park. I'm a Central Park Conservancy Discovery Guide and your guide for this tour. On this Bethesda walk across 72nd Street, I'll guide you through the history of some of the park's most famous landscapes and landmarks, and along the way, tell you about some of the very special trees that help make Central Park one of the most beloved public spaces on Earth. Strawberry Fields, donated to the Central Park Conservancy by his widow, artist Yoko Ono. Strawberry Fields is a living memorial honoring John Lennon. The landscape, named for Lennon's song Strawberry Fields Forever, surrounds one of the park's most recognizable icons, a black and white mosaic reading Imagine. The mosaic was created by Italian craftsmen and given to the park by the city of Naples. Further along the path, you'll find a bronze plaque listing 121 countries that chose to memorialize Lennon, envisioning Strawberry Fields as an international garden of peace. Wagner Cove. Wagner Cove, named for former mayor of New York, Robert Wagner, is a hidden oasis tucked into a shady corner of the lake. The area features a small rustic wooden shelter, which is a throwback to the original design of the lake area. When the park was first built, rowboats would circle the lake, picking up and dropping off passengers at one of six shelters around the water body's shore. The Conservancy restored Wagner Cove in 2010, with new seasonal plantings and improvements to the shoreline.
Hello, I'm Sarah Jessica Parker. You're standing in front of the pond, one of the park's seven water bodies. Since the park first opened in the 19th century, this has been the most heavily used park entrance. When Frederick Law Olmsted and Calvert Vaux designed the park, they imagined an immediate reprieve from the city's streets. The pond became a serene escape just feet from Fifth Avenue. Despite the millions of visitors who walk by the water's edge each year, you can still find a sense of solitude near the shimmering waters. It's hard to believe that this setting, like all of Central Park, is completely man-made. At the northeast end of the pond is Gapstow Bridge. Walk across it and you'll see a fenced-in wooded area that reaches out over the water. This is the Hallett Nature Sanctuary. Behind the gates is an ecosystem that mimics the wild, where animals can thrive in a secluded habitat. At 3.5 acres, Hallett is home to rabbits, raccoons, and groundhogs. If you've ever read The Catcher in the Rye, you'll remember Holden Caulfield visiting the pond and asking, "Where do the ducks go in the winter?" The answer is that most stay in the park, but plenty of other birds migrate. In 2001, the Central Park Conservancy completed a reconstruction of the pond, with shoreline plantings, an island habitat for birds and turtles, and a waterfall. The pond is both picturesque and practical. Before you explore the rest of the park, why not find the perfect spot to rest and relax along this magnificent shoreline?
Cherry Hill. Named for the Yoshino cherry trees that bloom here in April, Cherry Hill was originally designed as a scenic turnaround and watering trough for horse-drawn carriages. Designed by park architect Jacob Ray Mould, Cherry Hill Fountain is one of the park's most celebrated Victorian designs. It features decorative tiles, 8 small bird baths, frosted glass globes, and a gilded finial. The fountain and concourse were restored by the Conservancy in 2012, opening up one of the park's best lakeside views. Bow Bridge. Bow Bridge, designed by Calvert Vaux, was the first cast iron bridge erected in New York and only the second built in the United States. The first is in Brownsville, Pennsylvania. Its span of 60 feet, linking Cherry Hill with the Ramble, is the longest of any bridge in the park. The bridge's name references its resemblance to the graceful shape of an archer's bow. The 8 large planting urns on the bridge were missing for almost a century, until replicas of the original urns were replaced by the Central Park Conservancy in 2008.
Hey, this is Whoopi Goldberg. Welcome to all of you to one of my favorite places in Central Park. The March Hare, the Mad Hatter, the Cheshire Cat, and Alice are all from Lewis Carroll's classic Alice in Wonderland. Isn't Central Park just the greatest? You know, Alice found her way here in 1959. Philanthropist George Delacorte commissioned this bronze work as a gift to the children of New York and as a tribute to his late wife, Margarita. And the lines engraved around the sculpture are from the nonsensical poem, The Jabberwocky. That's also by Lewis Carroll, and it happened to be Mrs. Delacorte's favorite poem. The sculpture shows Alice holding court from her perch on the mushroom. Now, kids love to climb up on that mushroom with her, and thousands of little tiny hands, including my own, have literally polished its patina surface smooth. And as Alice herself might say, curiouser and curiouser. Holding a pocket watch is the March Hare, the host of the story's crazy tea party. At Alice's feet, the timid dormouse, he's nibbling a treat. The Mad Hatter's face is twisted in a crazy expression, and behind Alice sits the Cheshire Cat, my favorite. Now, I don't know if you know this, but in 1999, when they did a television version of the story, I was the Cheshire Cat. So, now, let's take a short walk up to 76th Street, where you'll find another Alice in Wonderland sculpture in the James Michael Levin Playground. There you'll find a fountain featuring Alice, the Queen, the Duchess, the Cheshire Cat, the Griffin, and the White Rabbit. Now, Central Park is a child's wonderland, full of charming spots like these. And there are plenty of sights here to explore, but just keep your eye out for a cat without a smile, or a smile without a cat.
Now you have 45 seconds to mark your answers. Now listen to the text again.
Welcome to Central Park. I'm a Central Park Conservancy Discovery Guide and your guide for this tour. On this Bethesda walk across 72nd Street, I'll guide you through the history of some of the park's most famous landscapes and landmarks, and along the way, tell you about some of the very special trees that help make Central Park one of the most beloved public spaces on Earth. Strawberry Fields, donated to the Central Park Conservancy by his widow, artist Yoko Ono. Strawberry Fields is a living memorial honoring John Lennon. The landscape, named for Lennon's song Strawberry Fields Forever, surrounds one of the park's most recognizable icons, a black and white mosaic reading Imagine. The mosaic was created by Italian craftsmen and given to the park by the city of Naples. Further along the path, you'll find a bronze plaque listing 121 countries that chose to memorialize Lennon, envisioning Strawberry Fields as an international garden of peace. Wagner Cove. Wagner Cove, named for former mayor of New York, Robert Wagner, is a hidden oasis tucked into a shady corner of the lake. The area features a small rustic wooden shelter, which is a throwback to the original design of the lake area. When the park was first built, rowboats would circle the lake, picking up and dropping off passengers at one of six shelters around the water body's shore. The Conservancy restored Wagner Cove in 2010, with new seasonal plantings and improvements to the shoreline.
Hello, I'm Sarah Jessica Parker. You're standing in front of the pond, one of the park's seven water bodies. Since the park first opened in the 19th century, this has been the most heavily used park entrance. When Frederick Law Olmsted and Calvert Vaux designed the park, they imagined an immediate reprieve from the city's streets. The pond became a serene escape just feet from Fifth Avenue. Despite the millions of visitors who walk by the water's edge each year, you can still find a sense of solitude near the shimmering waters. It's hard to believe that this setting, like all of Central Park, is completely man-made. At the northeast end of the pond is Gapstow Bridge. Walk across it and you'll see a fenced-in, wooded area that reaches out over the water. This is the Hallett Nature Sanctuary. Behind the gates is an ecosystem that mimics the wild, where animals can thrive in a secluded habitat. At 3.5 acres, Hallett is home to rabbits, raccoons, and groundhogs. If you've ever read The Catcher in the Rye, you'll remember Holden Caulfield visiting the pond and asking, "Where do the ducks go in the winter?" The answer is that most stay in the park, but plenty of other birds migrate. In 2001, the Central Park Conservancy completed a reconstruction of the pond, with shoreline plantings, an island habitat for birds and turtles, and a waterfall. The pond is both picturesque and practical. Before you explore the rest of the park, why not find the perfect spot to rest and relax along this magnificent shoreline?
Cherry Hill. Named for the Yoshino cherry trees that bloom here in April, Cherry Hill was originally designed as a scenic turnaround and watering trough for horse-drawn carriages. Designed by park architect Jacob Ray Mould, Cherry Hill Fountain is one of the park's most celebrated Victorian designs. It features decorative tiles, 8 small bird baths, frosted glass globes, and a gilded finial. The fountain and concourse were restored by the Conservancy in 2012, opening up one of the park's best lakeside views. Bow Bridge. Bow Bridge, designed by Calvert Vaux, was the first cast iron bridge erected in New York and only the second built in the United States. The first is in Brownsville, Pennsylvania. Its span of 60 feet, linking Cherry Hill with the Ramble, is the longest of any bridge in the park. The bridge's name references its resemblance to the graceful shape of an archer's bow. The 8 large planting urns on the bridge were missing for almost a century, until replicas of the original urns were replaced by the Central Park Conservancy in 2008.
Hey, this is Whoopi Goldberg. Welcome to all of you to one of my favorite places in Central Park. The March Hare, the Mad Hatter, the Cheshire Cat, and Alice are all from Lewis Carroll's classic Alice in Wonderland. Isn't Central Park just the greatest? You know, Alice found her way here in 1959. Philanthropist George Delacorte commissioned this bronze work as a gift to the children of New York and as a tribute to his late wife, Margarita. And the lines engraved around the sculpture are from the nonsensical poem, The Jabberwocky. That's also by Lewis Carroll. And it happened to be Mrs. Delacorte's favorite poem. The sculpture shows Alice holding court from her perch on the mushroom. Now, kids love to climb up on that mushroom with her, and thousands of little tiny hands, including my own, have literally polished its patina surface smooth. And as Alice herself might say, curiouser and curiouser. Holding a pocket watch is the March Hare, the host of the story's crazy tea party. At Alice's feet, the timid dormouse, he's nibbling a treat. The Mad Hatter's face is twisted in a crazy expression, and behind Alice sits the Cheshire Cat, my favorite. Now, I don't know if you know this, but in 1999, when they did a television version of the story, I was the Cheshire Cat. So, now, let's take a short walk up to 76th Street, where you'll find another Alice in Wonderland sculpture in the James Michael Levin Playground. There you'll find a fountain featuring Alice, the Queen, the Duchess, the Cheshire Cat, the Griffin, and the White Rabbit. Now, Central Park is a child's wonderland, full of charming spots like these. And there are plenty of sights here to explore, but just keep your eye out for a cat without a smile, or a smile without a cat.
Now you have 45 seconds to complete task one. Integrated Listening and Reading, Task 2. Read the text about marsupials, the animals that carry their newly born babies in a pocket on the mother's body. Then listen to a part of a lecture on a similar topic. You will notice that some ideas coincide and some differ in the two materials. Answer questions 16 to 25 by choosing A, if the idea is expressed in both materials, B, if it can be found only in the reading text, C, if it can be found only in the audio recording, and D, if neither of the materials expresses the idea. Now you have 7 minutes to read the text. Now listen to a part of a lecture on a similar topic and then do the tasks 16 to 25, comparing the text above and the lecture. You will hear the lecture twice.
People call it a bear, but the koala is really a marsupial. So it is much more like a kangaroo than it is like a bear. Here's what I mean. First, the koala has a gestation period of only about 35 days before it is born. Then a tiny, pink, furless creature about 19 millimeters long makes its way from the birth canal into the mother's pouch, where it attaches itself to one of two nipples. So it stays in the pouch to complete its development, and 6 to 7 months later, it pokes its head out and explores a short distance from the mother, jumping back into the pouch until it reaches 8 months, when it is too big to fit. And for another 4 months, it rides on the mother's back, or hangs from her stomach, until it finally becomes independent at about 1 year old. By then, it is about the same size as a teddy bear, and looks remarkably like one, with a furry coat, rounded ears, and a large nose to support its keen senses of smell and hearing. Native to Australia, the koala lives in trees and is a skillful climber. It sleeps in the branches during the day, and at night, it combs the trees for its favorite meal, eucalyptus leaves.
You will hear the lecture again in 45 seconds. Now listen to the lecture again.
People call it a bear, but the koala is really a marsupial. So it is much more like a kangaroo than it is like a bear. Here's what I mean. First, the koala has a gestation period of only about 35 days before it is born. Then a tiny, pink, furless creature about 19 millimeters long makes its way from the birth canal into the mother's pouch, where it attaches itself to one of two nipples. So it stays in the pouch to complete its development, and 6 to 7 months later, it pokes its head out and explores a short distance from the mother, jumping back into the pouch until it reaches 8 months, when it is too big to fit. And for another 4 months, it rides on the mother's back, or hangs from her stomach, until it finally becomes independent at about 1 year old. By then, it is about the same size as a teddy bear, and looks remarkably like one, with a furry coat, rounded ears, and a large nose to support its keen senses of smell and hearing. Native to Australia, the koala lives in trees and is a skillful climber. It sleeps in the branches during the day, and at night, it combs the trees for its favorite meal, eucalyptus leaves.
Now you have 5 minutes to finish the task and transfer your answers to the answer sheet. This is the end of the integrated task, task 2. Now you can start working on your reading task, task 3.